I had wanted to be a writer, but after the events I am about to describe, I studied engineering geology and became a building contractor. Even so, readers shouldn't conclude from my telling the story now that it is over, that I've put it all behind me. The more I remember, the deeper I fall into it. Perhaps you too will follow, lured by the enigma of fathers and sons. In 1984, we lived in a small apartment deep in Beşiktaş, near the 19th-century Ottoman İlhanur Palace. My father had a little pharmacy called Hayat, meaning life. Once a week, it stayed open all night, and my father took the late shift. On those evenings, I'd bring him his dinner. I liked to spend time there, breathing in the medicinal smells, while my father, a tall, slim, handsome figure, had his meal by the cash register. Almost 30 years have passed, but even at 45, I still love the smell of those old pharmacies lined with wooden drawers and cupboards. The Life Pharmacy wasn't particularly busy. My father would while away the nights with one of those small portable television sets so popular back then. Sometimes his leftist friends would stop by, and I would arrive to find them talking in low tones. They always changed the subject at the sight of me, remarking how I was just as handsome and charming as he was, asking what year was I in, whether I liked school, what I wanted to be when I grew up. My father was obviously uncomfortable when I ran into his political friends, so I never stayed too long when they dropped by. At the first chance, I'd take his empty dinner box and walk back home under the plane trees and the pale streetlights. I learned never to tell my mother about seeing father's leftist friends at the shop. That would only get her angry at the lot of them and worried that my father might be getting into trouble and about to disappear once again. But my parents' quarrels were not all about politics. They used to go through long periods when they barely said a word to each other. Perhaps they didn't love each other. I suspected that my father was attracted to other women, and that many other women were attracted to him. Sometimes my mother hinted openly at the existence of a mistress, so that even I understood. My parents' squabbles were so upsetting that I willed myself not to remember or think about them. It was an ordinary autumn evening the last time I brought my father his dinner at the pharmacy. I had just started high school. I found him watching the news on TV. While he ate at the counter, I served a customer who needed aspirin and another who bought vitamin C tablets and antibiotics. I put the money in the old-fashioned till, whose drawer shut with a pleasant tinkling sound. After he'd eaten, on the way out, I took one last glance back at my father. He smiled and waved at me, standing in the doorway. He never came home the next morning. My mother told me when I got back from school that afternoon, her eyes still puffy from crying. Had my father been picked up at the pharmacy and taken to the Political Affairs Bureau? They'd have tortured him there with bastinado and electric shocks. It wouldn't have been the first time. Years ago, soldiers had first come for him the night after the military coup. My mother was devastated. She told me that my father was a hero, that I should be proud of him. And until his release, she took over the night shifts, together with his assistant, Majid. Sometimes I'd wear Majid's white coat myself, though at the time I was, of course, planning to be a scientist when I grew up, as my father had wanted, not some pharmacist's assistant. When my father again disappeared 7 or 8 years after that, it was different. Upon his return, after almost 2 years, my mother seemed not to care that he had been taken away, interrogated and tortured. She was furious at him. "What did he expect?" she said. So, too, after my father's final disappearance, my mother seemed resigned, made no mention of Majid or of what was to become of the pharmacy. That's what made me think that my father didn't always disappear for the same reason. But what is this thing we call thinking anyway?